Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, Amanda Smith with you here on ABC Radio National. Here's a question that's often posed in Christendom. If Jesus were to return to Earth, what would you do? There's the old line from the Melbourne suburb of Hawthorne about moving Peter Hudson to centre-half forward. Then there's Dostoevsky's Grand Inquisitor in The Brothers Karamazov, who tells the resurrected Christ that his services are actually no longer required by the Church. Today in Artworks, we'll meet the actor who plays the Grand Inquisitor in a production that's just been seen at the Brisbane Festival. We'll also catch up with Lyndon Terracini, the artistic director of the festival. And the latest in our Isms in Art series for you too. Today it's the architect Norman Day, and he's tearing down the walls on professionalism. First to one of the visiting guests at the two international film festivals that are on at this time, in Melbourne and in Brisbane. Guy Sherwin is his name. He's from London, and film artist rather than filmmaker probably best describes him. Guy Sherwin, along with his collaborator Lin Lu, does film performances that use multiple projectors as well as live elements. It's what's also known as expanded cinema, although it doesn't necessarily happen in cinemas. You're just as likely to see Guy doing his thing in bars or galleries or warehouses. So if you went along to one of these live cinema events, what would you see and experience?
You would see a set of short films, maybe lasting between 6 and 15 minutes, which might have several projectors operating at once. It might have sounds that are generated by the machines themselves or by musicians working with them. You might see me performing, interacting with my own image in the film, and a bit of talking with the audience. So it's, you know, I quite like to have an informal atmosphere around the work.
Well, one that I've seen you do called Paper Landscape 2, so you're obviously into sequels, it's where we see you on film, a younger version of yourself actually, and you're painting away the layer of film of yourself in a landscape, dissolving it to reveal yourself again, this time peeling and tearing away at that sort of layer of film, and also stepping in and out of the landscapes, while live, every now and then you get up and paint on the wall that the film is being projected onto. So it's a sort of cinematic palimpsest.
Correct. That's a very nice way of putting it. It's a layering of time. And that one, that particular piece goes back to 1975, so, and I'm now getting on for 60. So, you know, there's this kind of huge time gap between when I first made this piece and first performed this piece. You know, it's kind of grown into a sort of larger piece, bringing myself in the present time back into these two layers to create a third layer of time. So I think a palimpsest, it's a difficult word, but it's a good word.
And you can see a version of Paper Landscape 2 on YouTube, along with a couple of other of Guy Sherwin's films. But live and in person, Guy, you do these sorts of expanded cinema performances at places all around the world, at film festivals?
Yes, film festivals or just isolated events. Did a big one in Chisenhall Gallery in London quite recently. We've been in Montreal, we've been in Windsor, Canada, New York, in Poland, in various capitals in Europe. It's not a sort of smoothly run operation that you might expect, say, of a dance company or something like that, you know, where all the lights go up and down. And it's a kind of alternative, do-it-yourself kind of aesthetic. The gaps are part of that.
Well, the death of cinema as we've known it is something that's been discussed for a long time, you know, from Gene Youngblood, who wrote the book Expanded Cinema in 1970, through to Peter Greenaway nowadays, who says that cinema died with the TV remote control, because the remote control was the beginning of viewers having choice, and the idea of choice has rendered sort of traditional cinema redundant. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, and where does your work fit into those ideas about the demise of film?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I've actually started calling my work live cinema. a few years back, the word cinema to me would have brought up the image of, you know, the Odeon or the Gaumont or the sort of big cinema houses. But actually, going back to the Greek origin of the word, which is to do with kinesis and movement, it's a word which I think is more meaningful than, say, to use the word film. And the idea of it, you know, it being a live event. Some years ago in England, people would go around with stickers in the back of their cars saying, keep music live. And I think there was the same anxiety that, you know, the CD or the various other ways you could access music would kill off live presentations of music. And that hasn't been the case at all. So I don't see it as being as dire as, say, Peter Greenaway is making out. People, in any case, are still going to the cinema to see the huge experience of that screen and the sound. You know, they're not going to get that in their homes. But,
you are offering something else.
Very, very different, yes. Mm. Different sort of, you know, I like to link it now more to the other performing arts, like, you know, free music, alternative dance, should we say, or any other kind of performative thing which is pushing the boundaries in some way and maybe crossing over with other media.
Well, Guy, while your work is always called experimental, in some ways it's actually quite old-fashioned, isn't it, in that you're working with film stock and projectors, not with digital technology and the digital manipulation of images. Why the old stuff?
There's nothing wrong with analogue. Why throw out analogue just because digital is just the latest fad, you know? An analogue has certain, you know, physical properties of thing. One understands how an image is made up physically. It's a chemical light thing going on. It's, you know, it's light exposed to the film emulsion. It's brought, the image is developed in the darkroom. It's something very tangible about that. And I'm sort of heartened by the, there's always students are coming through because I teach who pick up on the physical nature of film and they understand it being something entirely different from this sort of virtual world of the digital image, which you can't touch, you can only see it. And somehow that virtual world is very unresponsive to the kind of processes that I apply to film and other filmmakers like me. You know, you can scratch a film and it appears as a scratch on the film. That process doesn't apply to digital. It doesn't have any meaning digitally. And those sorts of layering, we talked about layering earlier on, the palimpsest of sort of layers of time and physical activity can be inscribed into the material, and that becomes very much part of the experience. So when you're watching something, you're actually, part of you is sort of thinking back to how this thing was made. That becomes a very important part of it. It's not simply an image. You know, like when you turn on your TV, people sit back, they're watching an image, not at all interested how the image is made. They enter that sort of world that is being portrayed. Whereas working sort of physically with the material, it is interesting how it's made, and it forms part of how you respond to the work.
Even in the way that it's projected, I mean, the projectors are part of your performance, aren't they?
Very much so.
And you can hear them. The whirring of the projector is part of the performance.
Yes, they're not hidden away behind a glass booth out there in the space. You can see us lacing the projectors up and, you know, breaking down occasionally. Or, you know, I've tried to find ways to make the projector into a performative tool and to make it closer to perhaps the ideal situation of being, say, a musician with a lot of control of the instrument, you know, to have that sort of interaction. So working with loops, with Lynn, we work with, the most elaborate piece we've done called Vowels and Consonants works with six projectors and loops, and also musicians come and going out of that.
Presumably with what you do, projectors are cheap nowadays.
They're very cheap. I mean, in England, on eBay or just going to the right suppliers, you can get a 60mm projector for about £70, which would be, what, $150 Australian. And, I mean, I have 8 reasonably working ones and a couple of burnt-out ones at home. And, you know, they're very easy to service, very well designed. And also, you can change the lenses around, you can freeze the projector, you can change the speeds. There's a lot, they're kind of instruments that you can actually play with.
It kind of reminds me of a story I heard Philip Glass once tell about how he got his particular sound, the sound that his music has, and it's that when he was first trying to make his way as a composer, he couldn't afford to pay musicians to play his music, so he got his friends to, and his friends were composers, and composers tend to be keyboard players, and the cheap keyboards at that time were the little Casios that you know, kids were given for Christmas, and then he said that by Easter you could get them secondhand really cheaply. And so it's his keyboard player friends and the cheapest keyboards that he could get that created the sound of the Philip Glass Ensemble. Right. So I'm just interested that, in a way, the sort of technology you're using, how that informs the work you do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all relates to the digital, shall we say, supremacy at the moment. Has created a kind of bargain basement situation for film. Studios just throw out all this equipment and often you can just pick it up for free. They just want people to take it away. I mean, all the cutting machines like Steenbecks and so on, if you can come and get this heavy thing, they'll probably just give it to you. No, I mean, it is a temporary situation. I mean, we may get to a point where these machines start to get quite expensive. And
sort of antique and valuable again.
Well, not in the sense of being antique, because the only point of having them is to use them, you know, not to sort of stick them on a shelf somewhere. You know, I think we'll be able to maintain these machines for some time to come.
Amanda Smith with you here in Artworks on ABC Radio National with the British film artist Guy Sherwin, who's in Australia as a guest of the Melbourne and Brisbane film festivals, doing live cinema performances. Guy, generally speaking, the cinema is seen as a place for telling stories, whether it's original stories or adaptations of novels or maybe plays. In your film world, what does storytelling mean to you? Does it mean anything to you?
Not a lot. I don't come at it from that perspective. In fact, I'm slightly anti-story. Not that I don't like stories. It's just that stories tend to dominate and, you know, people will always characterise film in terms of the story and ignore all kinds of other aspects of film. I mean, you wouldn't ask the same question of a painter, you know. I mean, people accept that abstract painting is okay. Why don't they accept that abstract film is okay? But they don't. It's to do with traditions. I think there is a time problem with film, because if you're confronted with a piece of abstract work and it's in time and you don't like it, you can't escape from it. If it's abstract and it's on the wall, you can just walk down to the next one.
You, in fact, as I understand it, studied painting and then moved into film. So how does that background in painting come into the way you work with film?
Well, in painting, you're thinking about the surface. You're thinking about space and kind of broader ways of thinking about an image than simply what it portrays and how it's received, how you perceive it. I'm very interested in the psychology of perception and the kind of tricks in the eye and that kind of thing. They all come from my painting background. So a lot of the film work I'm doing is to do with sort of challenging what the eye can apprehend and how it makes sense of information and so on. You know, it's very much a visually based concern that I've brought into film. I've just added the time element to, you know, what was my painting interest and became my film interest.
What about sound in your in your films? We've talked about the image a lot. Where does the sound come from? What's your interest in creating sound?
A lot of my work has been around creating sound visually. And
what does that mean?
Well, I take the image that you've recorded with the camera and sort of flip that image over into the little band that runs down the edge of the film, which is recording the soundtrack.
The soundtrack, right.
So as the film is passing through the projector, the little strip down the side, which is carrying a fluctuation of light, is passing over its own little sound-reproducing head, and that is generating sounds.
So the image is making the sound.
Exactly, yeah. You're hearing what you're seeing, and sometimes vice versa. You can work it backwards that you create a soundtrack and from that make the images. So, for example, well, it works for certain kinds of material better than others. If you have a series of horizontal bands of black and white, that creates very strong sounds. If you get, say, one variation of light and dark per frame, there are 24 frames per second, you have a sound rather like this, like a sort of low motorbike sound. Now, if you double that up, you get an octave above, and if you double that up, you get an octave above that. So it's a very exact science. There are 256 cycles in a second. There are 24 frames per second. If you have 12 lines per second, you've got middle C on a piano. And you can, so you can look at the visual world. You can go out and look at patterns in railings and view staircases and railway lines, and you can actually try and sort of orchestrate them or make a film around that idea.
Well, while you do work in this kind of experimental, live, expanded, non-narrative cinema, do you still like going to see the latest Indiana Jones or Batman movie like the rest of us guy?
Yeah, I mean, I go to the movies. I quite like kind of weepies sometimes. I'm just like any other person. I've got exactly the same, you know, lousy kind of pub opinions about the latest film.
Which is kind of reassuring. And Guy Sherwin, along with his collaborator Lin Liu, has just been at the Melbourne